This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, it's grand final joy for the Eagles and heartbreak for the Pies as Buckley and Collingwood fall agonisingly short again. We take a look at the key moments, where the match was won and lost, and what the future holds for both clubs.
This, it'll be a very good game. Kick two. He's kicked three. He's got three. What a game of footy. Stevenson so quick here. Oh, fumble, fumble, fumble. They're not going to catch him. He's going to kick a second.
If he kicks the goal, I think West Coast can win the grand final. 2 minutes and just under. Massive. Sheed from the boundary. Needs to be inch perfect. He is. He's got the most impossible goal.
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson and with me is Jimmy Bartel, Norm Smith medalist, Brownlow medalist, raconteur. Jimmy, welcome.
Oh, well, that's one of the better intros I've got. Thanks for that introduction.
And on the left, Jake Nile. Welcome, Jake.
Well, no, it was an interesting grand final. It was one of the better ones. I'm not sure where I'd place it, but it was certainly right up there as drama, as far as drama goes. And West Coast, remarkable.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. I mean, you need time after these things to process quite where it sits, but it's certainly in that bracket of the best. Certainly with the Sydney and West Coast games as well, and going right back, but. What did you think, Jimmy? Where was it won and lost?
Won and lost. It's a tough one because I feel like after, you know, halfway through the first quarter, it was all West Coast, really. They were able to dictate the terms of the game and the game style, and they were able to get what they wanted. Now, both coaches would probably say a lot of what they went into the game wanting to get, you know, we want to get this, this and that. I think they'd get a lot of ticks. Collingwood got their pressure that they wanted with 100-plus tackles, with daring, and that forced the first three goals from turnovers. But I felt like once West Coast finally settled into the game, they were able to play this style of footy that we've come accustomed to, which is from the back six, you build the football up, you kick, you mark, you slowly build it up, you allow your defenders to get up in the game, and then you've always got that bailout option. When you've got Darling and Kennedy in front of you, you're always a threat.
Yeah, look, the game was played more on West Coast, kick and catch style, which is a little bit more Hawthorn. It was an interesting contrast of chaos and control, and I think just that little bit of composure the Eagles had, and they'd been there before. I don't think you can underestimate that. Collingwood had five or six players who'd played finals, but they had a lot that hadn't, and just in key moments of the game, a game like that, even though West Coast on the balance of play probably should have won by three goals. Mm. I felt that in the key moments, they were just a little bit more, a little bit steadier and had a little bit more knowledge of what they were doing.
Yeah, well, those key moments were even distilled to that one play, which summed up so much of the game. McGovern takes the big mark in the back pocket.
Leaves his man.
Dugowie watches him go to the ball. He takes a big mark. He kicks to Vardy, marks. Kicks long. Ryan takes a beautiful mark, then kicks on.
The key thing about a lot of these were probably decisions in hindsight, which, I think a lot of Collingwood people go, if I did this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, look, I know we're reflecting on one passage of play, and it was the most important and probably the passage of play we'll see forever and a day. But I'm with you, and it sounds like you as well, Mickey, is that the better team won. It was a death by 1,000 cuts in that last quarter. 3-6, they were just 60-plus inside 50s. They were relentless. But just little things like allowing Ryan to roll off the mark so easily gains an extra 5-10 metres. What that does, you know, if Ryan's forced to come back and kick it long and slow, are you able to get an extra defender over? You mentioned McGovern being brave to come off his man. What if the Collingwood player came and just contested the footy? It goes out of bounds.
Yes.
So there's just all these little what if moments.
Well, the other big what if is the mark, the final mark, and which delivered Sheed the goal that was superb goal, but should the mark have been paid? Should the free kick have been paid instead?
Yeah, I find this a difficult one because, again, I'm saying I think the right team ended up winning.
Yes.
And if it wasn't, then it probably would have been another moment. But let's talk about that moment. Now, there was probably another 30 marking contests during the day where you could have plucked a free kick. Willie Rioli is entitled to make contact to Maynard. What he probably didn't do well, if it was a block, was disguise it as well. So, you know, often when you do that, you act like you're coming back to mark it. I think he initially was blocking, thinking, I'm going to protect the drop zone and the footy. And at the last minute, I think he's seen Dom Sheed coming back and, you know, allowed him a little bit more space, you know, so Maynard couldn't get in and affect the spoil. Free kick, Jake?
Yeah, I think it was a free kick, but I think there are other incidents that, like, there was Jeremy Howe looked like he was just about pinged for holding the ball earlier. I think there was... West Coast were the better side, so I think it sort of got there in the end in a sort of just sense, and Collingwood would have pinched it. Having said that, I thought the moments when Collingwood had control, there was just a little moment in the last quarter, even though West Coast had been on top on the balance of play, there was just a little rally around that time Mason Cox took that mark and he was a bit too far out to kick the goal by his, you know, he doesn't kick it that far. When they went backwards with the ball, I know you highlighted this, Gleese, in your column for Monday. I felt that that was a crucial moment in the game where Collingwood just had to get the ball forward, a territory-based game. Given that they had the lead, the Eagles would have had to travel the length of the ground under enormous pressure where you could well turn it over and that would be the game. There wasn't much more than 3 minutes left when that happened. To me, that felt Collingwood have played a style all year where they don't go backwards that much, and I thought that was a poor decision by the players involved, which I think was actually Crisp and Sidebottom.
Yeah. I thought unquestionably it was a free kick. I mean, he's pushed against him to protect the teammate getting the ball. Mm. But I also hold with Lee Matthews' point. Why were only four free kicks paid in the entire last quarter? There were only four indiscretions in the most tense 30 minutes of play. That's silly.
I think I saw about six of them, and I'm glad they weren't cool because I think they're the bugbear of everyone. Six, you know, encroachment or protector zone ones where guys were nearly scratching the guy's shoulders. He was that close.
That's right. They've been paid all year.
Been paid all year. They were let go. And, yeah, look, you're either, you know, a couple of schools. There's a couple of schools of thought is less free kicks the better, it always seems, and that's the way you play it out, or do you pay everything you see? And, look, I'm a bit towards, well, you tend to let it go, and I know a lot of people are different in grand finals.
Yeah, I think it is an interesting one because the result was right.
Yes.
West Coast was the better team, and you look at it over the season as well and say, well, absolutely they were the best premier, they were the right premier. They won home and away. They were in the top four from early in the season. They did it without Nat Nui. They beat Collingwood three times for the year. They beat all of the top four. They came from five goals down in a grand final and won, and they are deserving and just, and their midfield was better. That was the other thing. Collingwood went in and we all believed Collingwood would hold the midfield sway and it'd be about their key forwards. Their midfield won.
Absolutely spot on. Yeah, rattled off eight in a row. Undefeated in Victoria, beat Richmond, who everyone had as the benchmark team. You mentioned they're top two, top four for the whole entire year.
Plus the adversity they dealt with. They had three of their best players not playing. And just one, I think, absolute lesson of the game. And this was an outstanding effort by these players. Schofield, who came in for Shepherd. Vardy, who effectively came in for Nat Nui. And Sheed, who effectively came in for Andrew Gaff. Now, those three players, they did about as well. I mean, Sheed, you couldn't have got a better game out of Gaff. I know Gaff will be kicking himself today and probably for a lot of his career for what happened. But Dom Sheed was in the best three or four players on the ground. The Vardy combination with Lysett was absolutely instrumental with their role against Brody Grundy in winning them the premiership. But they held up, that combination held up basically from the moment Nat Nui went down.
It was interesting too that I touched on this in a piece, but you take your lead from the Premier each year. Well, this Premier couldn't be more different than last year's. Like they play with, Richmond played with one key forward.
Well, it's a tick to the conventional, isn't it? If we call it the conventional, the more traditional setup. I'm with you on this. So the last two Premiers before this have been manic pressure, lots of mid and small type forwards with the one big banana. But this is two key forwards, two ruckmen, two key backs.
And playing a kick and possession game rather than a manic game. So which way does footy go from here then? You know, does that?
Well, I think the lesson though, Gleese, is that you know, love the one you're with. What you've got is what you have to make of. Now, Nathan Buckley, they fashioned a forward line around Mason Cox, and for the first half that was pretty ineffective. But Mason Cox, I tribute to him, his second half.
He was good.
Almost kept Collingwood in the game, and I thought he was the player most likely to if they're going to get over the line, because when everyone gets tired, Jimmy, that 7 foot guy who can put his arms up, and he is a pretty good mark. So I thought that, you know, there's a bit of growth that's even though they don't have a conventional forward line, Collingwood, I think they almost got there.
Well, the other thing is that we sat here last week and spoke about conventional wisdom is fit players in finals. Well, McGovern just threw that out as well. Is in having his hip drained, or his bruised love handles, as he calls them, drained, only days before the grand final, goes in, and he's one of the most influential players on the ground.
Yeah, spot on. And I think the way West Coast plays it, they're back six. They're not this, and I mean this in the most respectful way, because they're the most organised back six along with the Tigers. You know, they're just so well structured. Everyone knows their spot. They back themselves in the air, which I absolutely love defenders who go mark the footy. But they're not that high energy transition defence that we see from some other defensive sides who try and get out and just beat you with run and transition up and down the ground. They hold their position. So once McGovern marks it, he distributes the ball beautifully. And then you almost watch him for a bit. He just goes and finds his next spot, doesn't he? He almost jogs or walks and conserves his energy.
Well, he did also become that player, particularly in, I thought he was really influential in the second quarter when Collingwood was, they had about a 15-minute period there where they just owned the ball forward and they couldn't score. And whatever they did, whichever way they tried to attack the goal, it kept hitting this sort of McGovern in front of them. And that's where they couldn't get the mark from Cox. They couldn't get Dugowie on his own. But there's in the end, there's also these moments that Collingwood will reflect on. Yes, we talk about them pinching the grand final, but it feels weird to talk about pinching a grand final that you kick after you kick the first 5 goals of the game and you get 2 goals up late in the game. But there were those moments, Jake, like the you think of what might have happened, the rushed behind,
the rush behind could have rushed Tom Langdon. I mean, I think there's just a series of things in a game decided by a kick. There's a series of things that where you can pinpoint moments where Collingwood could have done something to you know, just one or two. You know, I think Nathan Buckley said that they'd be haunted for a while by some of those.
Well, I think Alex Woodward will be haunted for a while, but he shouldn't be.
No,
the runner.
Well, that was in the third quarter. I think there was a long way to go in that game, and they got 2 goals in front after that. To me, it was more that they couldn't get, when they got the 2 goal advantage, they couldn't get that next clearance.
They gave
not
away
even
the
goal,
free kick
clearance. They gave away a free kick. Grundy gave away a blocking free,
and then it's a goal.
And then it's a goal. Vardy took a great pack mark. So there were just moments when, I think it's the moments when Collingwood had the momentum and surrendered it. I think that's essentially the story of where they've blown their opportunity. It wasn't so much what they didn't, it wasn't terrible mistakes that they did, but where they couldn't press an advantage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think, I certainly don't think it was down to the runner. I think, you know, that was a poor kick to go inside. And
see the effect it has on the way people view runners getting in the way.
Well, they're supposed to be getting out off the field, so we'll take a break. Coming up, Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Well, welcome to, I believe, the final edition for the year of Just Between Us. Daniel Cherney back on deck after a couple of weeks off. My apologies to the listeners. And with me, not Sam McClure, because he's got greater duties with old mate Hutchie. We've got Anthony Colangelo here now to a more than adequate replacement.
Hello, Daniel.
Held his spot in the two.
I have held my spot after the grand final, but it is good to have you back. I'm sure the listeners will be happy to have one of the flagship presenters back for this segment.
I'm surprised you're having to mention the word flag. Given the events of the weekend, Anthony is a devout Pies man, but good on you for fronting up. Anthony, just between us, Jill and Sheil, we all await his decision on his future. Obviously, he's been meeting with several Victorian clubs. One of those is Carlton, the Carlton Football Club, who finished last in 2018. And just between us, Stephen Silvani, who of course would know Dylan Sheil back from his days at the Giants, he got a call, I think, on Wednesday to say that Carlton had organised a meeting with Gillen Sheil. There was one issue, though.
Stephen Silvani, the great Sauce, was in Queensland on holiday in Noosa. So Bruce Matheson, the Carlton power broker and pokies king, tycoon, if you will, he decided to try and get a private jet, offered a private jet to fly Dylan Sheil up to Queensland.
Really?
To meet with Sauce. I think wiser heads prevailed.
So the jet didn't get off the ground?
No jet. Cool your jets. And in the end, they end up meeting later in the week. But there was an offer. Dylan Sheil was almost on his way to Queensland.
Almost on his way to Queensland on a pokies
field. To join Lockie Neal and Lincoln McCarthy.
Yeah, on a pokies field private jet, Dan.
Gotta love football. Anthony.
Look, obviously Saturday's grand final for the black and white side of the equation was a sad affair. A proud day, but a sad affair. And it was a similar vibe down in the rooms after the game.
We did some great work, I must say.
Thank you, Dan. And, of course, the winners' rooms would have been packed. There would have been no room to move, but there was a lot more room in the Collingwood area. But it got to a point where a few heads were starting to turn. There were all the different huddles around the players talking, family, friends, associates, whatever. But one particular player probably had, you would say, a few more people in there around him.
And, is that right?
That is right. And I'm led to believe that what's happened is this particular player is handed out his four or five wristbands, or however many you get to allow people into the rooms. And then one of his friends has gone and used a photocopier.
And the old photocopier, the old Xerox.
The old Xerox has photocopied the wristbands.
Oh, it's genius.
Cut them out and then sticky taped them onto a whole lot of other people, and there's been a big kind of influx into the rooms. Look, I have no problem with it, personally.
I knew he can get away with it.
It's a possible security breach, but I think
that's
it was
right.
All
we got Nelly Yeo into the Brownlow, so that's we're going pretty well.
Yeah, if Nelly Yeo gets
into on the red carpet.
that's a whole podcast episode, that. But if Nelly Yeo gets into the Brownlow, we're okay with a bit of photocopying happening. But, maybe it's something that can happen.
Anthony, let me put it to you.
Okay.
Is this a player that's you sort of think of Collingwood and
Sure. Their
players, and there's probably a couple, maybe one, who sort of comes to mind in terms of known, so we've had a bit of chutzpah over the journey, a bit of cheek.
Chutzpah.
might have snagged a few goals on grand final day.
No comment, Dan.
There you go. JD.
Finishes off for season 2018.
A final salvo. Anthony, just between us, congratulations to the West Coast Eagles. I know you didn't want to mention it, but one of their very durable and a good player over many years, Sam Butler from 2006 Premiership team, remains in the club, I believe, as an assistant coach in some capacity, maybe a development coach. Anyway, last week in Perth, it was all hands on deck because Sam Butler, not moving cones at training, not trying to protect Jeremy McGovern's vital internal organs. He was out in the car park at their open training session directing traffic, quite literally. Sam Butler, the premiership player, one of the Eagles' premiership players in 2006, they had him out directing traffic. So that's perhaps the secret to the West Coast Eagles' success. No job too big or too small. We saw after the game some great footage of the Eagles cleaning up after themselves, very classy. I think Shannon Hearn's one of the unsung captains of the league, but a really good operator. So, the Eagles.
No, great club, the West Coast Eagles, and that kind of traffic directing is what makes premierships.
Oh, I believe so. Anthony, fantastic to have you on this year. Who knows what happens with Sam next year. He's got media deals coming out of,
Talk about trade week. That's one for you.
There you go. Watch this space.
Just between us.
Done it the hard way this year. Our football club, our volunteers, our footy department, our coaches, our families around all that, and the players. It's all been a united group this year. It's been a fantastic ride. We've faced a lot of adversity. My heart goes out to Harry McKenzie, Brad Shepherd, Nick Natanui, and Andrew Gaff. You're a part of it. It's a squad mentality.
Well, welcome back, Jake. Further to that idea of stealing a flag is the notion that as they sit right now, going into next year, the Eagles would be one of the teams to beat, knowing who they're going to most likely have coming back in. But Collingwood probably sits there as the fourth or fifth, sixth best team. So when you're that close to a grand final, that's the heartbreak of it. That close to a premiership, to then go into the next year being
further back in the pack. Advantage. I mean, it could be a team that comes from outside the finals could win the premiership next year. That's quite possible. I mean, there's clubs like Adelaide and Essendon that would be looking at it next year, thinking they could do it. The competition is so volatile. There are no guarantees. They may not even make the finals. I would say this, though. I think Collingwood will get another crack at contending for the premiership in the next 3 to 4 years. I think that their core group, Pendlebury's the oldest player. He's 30. But most of their good players are 24 and 25. So if you look at Treloar, Grundy,
Hoskin Elliott,
their defenders, Maynard, Crisp, Jeremy Howe's 27, 28. Sidebottom, even, I was surprised to look at his birth date. He's only 27 now. Stevenson, of course. So that core, Adams is 25. You sort of look at that core midfield. And I think they discovered a player this year. I think he's going to be a very good player, Jimmy Ian, Braden Sire. He's got a lot of, he couldn't run out the game, but his ability in close is for a player who played, 12 or 13 games?
Yeah, he's that big body, first possession clearance player that a lot of sides are now screaming out for. I think we went through the cycle of let's try and find all the runners. Now we're finding out, we still need guys.
Getting the ball's
getting
important.
The ball to the runner. So we need that link player. It's going to be an interesting time for Collingwood because, yes, I do think they have the ability to contend again and contend again even next year, but there's no guarantees in football. As we saw with the Crows and the Bulldogs in recent time. But it's an interesting time for their list management and coaching staff to generally assess where they're at. Now, you can either go back to the draft and get some young talent and top up with the names we mentioned like Stevenson and DeGally and all these guys who are still hopefully projecting onwards and upwards, or do you think you're a lot closer and you hit the trade free agency period and you trade out a few of these picks to go land whoever it may be that you think will help you get over the line?
Well, I've been interested in Stephen May, but I think the big decision they have to make right now is on Darcy Moore, and I think that's a huge decision.
Which decision do you think comes first?
Darcy
Moore comes first?
Yes.
Before Stephen May?
Yeah, because I think the only way they could really get Stephen May is by doing Darcy Moore.
They can find all sorts of ways to do things. You can go back and do
contract. It's the easiest or most logical one, though.
I mean, to do a trade, though, because Stephen May is under contract as we speak. I think Melbourne are in the van if Jesse Hogan goes. So I think that not to...
So again, you just mentioned something else has to get done for him to land at Melbourne. That's why I was saying, could you do May first and end up with both?
Well, then Collingwood need a key position player. Now, Moore is on the list, though. So I think the easier thing to do is to actually sign the player you've got. Try and get him right. Try and get him... Now, there's obviously a money dispute with Moore and Collingwood. But it is a hell of a lot easier if they can come to terms to just develop that player, because bearing in mind he can play both ends. So that's one asset for Darcy Moore. Very disappointing for him and for Collingwood that he wasn't able to play, because again, you come back to it, if he'd been able to play on Josh Kennedy in the grand final, you'd say they probably win the game.
Well, I think in the end they were closer to picking Ben Reid.
I still believe Goldtake was the right matchup, though.
Well, he was the only matchup
for what they had, yeah.
They didn't have Dunn.
He's quicker, he's rangier.
Yeah, he's not tall enough really for Kennedy, though. Kennedy's got that extra bit, he's 6'5", 6'6".
Moore would have been a good matchup for him, but I think he could go with Darling, then Goldsack.
Plus the other effect you have is that if you've got that extra tall player, then Jeremy Howe can play on a Lacroix.
Well, that
and you can get, and I think that's a big difference.
That's the difference. That's what you want to do if you're Collingwood next year is... He's still going to be a defender, but he's going to be a smaller version, but you want him playing the McGovern role. See the ball, go intercept it and launch our attack. You don't want him having to put the arm across and then make his decision from there.
Which is sort of what Tom Langdon was also doing. They had the pair of them and earlier this year, Scharenberg. So they've got a few players that their big query, Colin, will be how many players can we keep on the list that don't get out there and play? Because they've carried a lot of injured players.
Well, Elliott's another one, of course. So there's a, it looks like that he's recommitting, but they're recommitting to him, because I think that's more the question, isn't it, Close?
Yeah, well, he hasn't played all year this year, played 17 last year, but played none the year before. So it's not a great output for a player. But you've got him, you've got Daniel Wells, You've got obviously Darcy Moore being able to excuse me, get out there.
Lyndon Dunn
may be available early
in
the season.
What would you do, Jimmy? Just of your calling, would you? What's your position?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I don't think you sell the farm for what you got. What I understand is you've got three pretty talented kids in their next gen academy. So you're going to need points and picks to get that. So you want to get that done.
But Will Kelly.
Yeah, Will Kelly, a father son. So again, needing points and all that sort of stuff, which comes from draft picks. Look, I would like another defender who actually defends first. So like we were saying, you can get Howe and whoever it may be, if it's Scharenberg or Langdon coming back, intercepting the footy. Because we've seen in the last 3 years, when we're talking about defensive groups, you know, Easton Wood did it for the Bulldogs. Marcus Adams did it for the Bulldogs. You know, these guys did it. Richmond, well, that's what Richmond base their footy off. We speak about the last 2 years. They get off and intercept the footy. We've had McGovern do it. Shepherd was doing it for the Eagles as well. Barras. So you need a couple in your back line who just go see the footy and go get it.
What about the Eagles? Do we expect Lysett to go? Gaff, what do you think?
It's a difficult one after you win a premiership. There's two schools of thought there. If you're Andrew Gaff, is it a good time to leave because you haven't cost them? You haven't cost them and you haven't left them in the lurch. And then the old, you know, when you show up to November training, all your mates who've got premiership medallions and you miss out, does that hurt? And you go and try and help another club, you know, a Victorian club, and the ones who, you know, use your term, are in the van, haven't won a premiership for a while, and you could be part of that. Could that make it easier? Or do you feel like you'd love to win one with those guys and experience it? So that's a difficult decision for them. But it seems like out of the two Western Australian clubs, the Eagles and Freo, the Eagles is the destination club for, you know, draft trades, you know, being Lobb. And if Tim Kelly was to get done from Geelong, you know, he's saying he likes the Eagles as well. So they don't have a shortage of players who would put their hand up to come back and play for the Eagles.
Yeah, although I think most likely if Hogan goes anywhere, it's probably the Dockers, but that's more on what the Eagles have got and where could he fit in and how could they do the deal. So what do you think, Jake? Which way will the Eagles go?
Well, the Eagles are in the position where they can pretty much go young. I think that even if they trade in players, Lobb would be the big decision. But I imagine that would be a little bit influenced by what happens with Lysett. Because really, Lobb's made to be a forward second ruck. He's a forward first. So really, that would be the big decision. And I think that's not necessarily with their first pick. That would be round the mark. It might be a little bit overs.
You know. Yeah, they also like Tom Hickey, don't they, from St Kilda? So,
a rough head's been floated as well from the Bulldogs.
Yeah, so the money going out, if the gaff money goes out, clearly they can do quite a lot.
Take a break. Coming up, quick questions.
We're online all the time. Just search Age Real Footy on Facebook or Twitter.
Do feel like after conceding the first five, the Eagles are coming back into the game. Shuey! And talk about coming back into it! They are now right amongst it, Julie Bishop.
Well, welcome back for our last quick questions, and it's a Norm Smith question. So we have to go to the Norm Smith medalist within the room, and it's not either of us, Jake. Jimmy, who was your pick for the Norm Smith medal?
Well, my pick when we sat here last week was Taylor Adams, and I thought I was nearly home with Taylor Adams. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. For me, if I was given the 3-2-1, I can't argue with Luke Shuey. I thought he was the best man on the ground across four quarters. He stuffed the stat sheet, as they say in basketball. He nearly ticked every column. 8 tackles, 9 inside 50s, 8 clearances, 1 goal, most metres gained, 34 possessions, 19 contested. He did everything you can think of. And my two was for Dom Sheed. He was another one. Now, we mentioned if Collingwood were going to win, it was through their midfield. Those two put up a mighty effort to actually more than match the Collingwood midfield. Collingwood have been averaging plus 30 possessions more than the opposition. West Coast managed to beat them in that stat on Saturday. And if you kick a goal that's probably going to give you cashies for the rest of your life, I think you deserve a couple of votes. So 3-2-1, Shuey, Sheed, Adams for me.
Adams, yeah. Jake?
Yeah, no, it was the right decision. Shuey was the best player on the ground. He was consistent through the four quarters. There were players who had, you know, halves and bits and pieces. Honourable mentioned a player. I didn't actually put him in my votes, but Barras, we haven't mentioned. I think his game in the first half was very, very influential.
Yeah, I went the same three as you, but I had Adam second best and then Sheedon. I think it was really open after that as to yes. who you would throw in. In the five votes, I threw in Tommy Langdon. I thought he had a great game.
Hutchings,
Schofield could have been in there.
McGovern,
another player,
and Kennedy player. Was the one that I threw in. I thought Kennedy
was the best forward.
I think three on the day.
The other player who wasn't in the best three or four on the ground, but he was probably in Collingwood's best three or four was Chris Mayne. Which was a big surprise.
Yep.
Next question was, and we touched on this earlier, but was this grand final the best of the last decade, Jake?
No, I think 2012. Just sticks with me when Sydney got up and beat Hawthorn, because that had more, in terms of a drama, they had more plot twists. I think there was more turns in the game where one team had an ascendancy than the other. Hawthorn, of course, were inaccurate and probably cost them the premiership. But that also, there was an unexpected element of the way the Swans got on top at the end. I thought that was just a marginally better game than the one we just saw, but it was certainly in the best three or four of the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's certainly on the podium, isn't it, in the last decade? And you have to throw the drawn grand final in, don't you, 2010? Yeah. The bounce.
Yes.
Like Lenny Hayes' kick, Stephen Milne, the bounce. You know, it had all, like we said, it's got the little moments within the game that, you know, just a bit of fate going the other way, and the Saints could be a premiership side. And what would have been a boil over to knock over Collingwood, who were the raging favourites that year.
Well, you think of that bounce and then to lose this one, if they'd done that, which segues us nicely to the next question, Jake, which is Nathan Buckley the unluckiest man in football?
Well, he's right up there. I mean, there's elements, a lot of people comparing him to Bob Rose, and it's sort of, I think that for Nathan Buckley, as a player to miss out in 2002 in a close game where he was the best on the ground, and then, of course, he missed out as Brownlow medalist in 2003. They were thrashed by Brisbane. And this year he was the coach of the year, and he's missed out again. It's a hell of a run. I think one thing about Buckley, where there's a comparison with Bobby Rose, who did win a flag as a player, it should be noted, in 1953, is that he's carried himself with great dignity and class. And I think that Nathan Buckley as a figure in the game, I don't think – a lot of people don't like Collingwood, and fair enough, but I think – very few people begrudge him that sort of success, because the guy's dealt with a lot of adversity and he's done it with great dignity.
Well, that's the big change for them too, isn't it? Because when he was playing, he was the lightning rod for Collingwood hatred, and yet he's actually become the likable face of Collingwood now for people that aren't Collingwood.
Well, it's an alternative to Eddie. Yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for this, our last episode of the Real Footy Podcast, but we do have a trade special coming up, so tune in for that. But a big thank you to you, Jimmy, and to you, Jake, for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen, and everybody else who we shared this room with. I enjoyed sparring with Jake in particular.
Likewise, Jimmy.
Thanks also to Channel 7 for the audio used in this episode and for episodes during the season. We'd also like to thank everyone who has contributed to the podcast throughout the season, our regulars, Caro and Bob Murphy, obviously Jimmy and Jake. Thanks also to the people who put it together for us, Claire and Rachel and Margaret in the booth next door. And thank you, the listeners, for tuning in each week. We hope you enjoy the season and our conversations we have our fireside chats every week. We still have one more episode to bring you, our trade special. Keep an eye out for it later this week. Once again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next season.